The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly Extra, the third international break pod in a row. England beat Switzerland in a slightly interesting friendly. It's Fortress Hamden in the Nations League as the Scots triumph over Albania, while Northern Ireland make light work of Israel. Ireland's draw with Poland is much less interesting than WhatsApp Gate, which leads us to the slightly surprising conclusion that Roy Keane is quick to anger. Also today, Sunderland sacking players and the return of the Premier League. That plus your questions, feedback corner, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly Extra. We have a panel today. Barry Glendenning, how are you?
I am very well.
It's nice to see you. John Ashdown, it's been too long.
Yeah, it's been a year.
A whole year. Is your contract just an annual appearance?
Well, I'm worrying I'd sort of hit 49 pods, and that if I was played a 50th, I was due some huge bonus.
Oh, I see. We've triggered a clause.
Absolutely.
By getting
I'm
you in.
I'm expecting a pile of cash.
Exactly. That'll bankrupt us and there'll be no pods anymore. Philippe Auclair, nice to see you.
Nice to see you.
Is it fair to say you just forced the work experience to get you and you alone a coffee?
That is totally false. I didn't force anybody to do anything of the kind, but I'm very grateful for the cup of coffee which is in front of me right now.
And it seems favouritism, Barry, in that work experience Matthew offered Philippe a coffee, but no one else. You know, I'm my throat is like crumpled parchment here.
This particular clause was triggered, you see.
well, work experience Matthew has come all the way from New York to be with us, and I'm outraged by the snob.
Although, to be fair to him, he's the first ever work experience who has come in on a Monday and then returned on a Thursday to see it again. Right, so we talk about football. Then England 1, Switzerland 0, therefore England avoiding 4 defeats in a row for the first time in their history. John Ashdown, did you enjoy this?
It was an England friendly, so no. It's kind of fairly standard, really. Yeah, I mean, it sort of confirmed that the whole sort of weekend of fixtures, in a way, confirmed that what we already knew, which is England aren't quite as good as Spain, but are a little bit better than Switzerland. I don't know how much more we can draw than that, to be honest.
That Spain are a bit stronger than anybody else
well,
at the moment.
Yeah.
Barry, can you give us any more? I've written Danny Rose as a positive.
Yeah, look, there's not a whole lot you can read into it. I thought Danny Rose played well. Marcus Rashford ratcheted up the pressure on Raheem Sterling, I suppose, when it comes to starting berths. Trent Alexander-Arnold did well, and Ruben Loftus-Cheek failed to impress when given an opportunity to be the playmaker England seemed to be crying out for. And beyond that, it's all a bit meh.
Philippe, I mean, so much is said about this midfielder, this sort of ludicrous, shining midfielder that we're looking for. And actually, I still haven't quite worked out if we're trying to find a defensive midfielder who can pass the ball well or a sort of a jinky Paul. People say we need Paul Gascoigne, but he didn't play deep, did he?
Not really, no. It's a bit strange to say. You would have thought that Raheem Sterling, actually, when he plays for England, has this same kind of role. He plays off the shoulder of the main striker and is given license to roam and so forth. I think the problem is more, yes, everybody's looking for the, I don't know, we call it the sheep with five legs in French, who can be both...
what is that in French?
Le mouton à cinq pattes.
Oh, okay.
So who could be Brian Robson and Peter Beardsley and Paul Gascoigne rolled into one, plus a little smattering of Andrea Pirlo and Andres Iniesta's left foot. So perhaps it's not going to happen.
I mean, on the pitch, you want Robson, Gascoigne and Beardsley rolled into one. Off the pitch, I'm not sure.
Depends who picks the tab.
Yeah. Danny Rose said the first half was embarrassing. Did you think that? I mean, it was interesting. He sort of said, well, it was a bit embarrassing first half and we fixed it. And then that turned into massive headlines saying, embarrassing.
Yeah, look, again, it's a friendly. It's fairly inconsequential. They didn't play very well in the first half. Apparently, they all shouted at each other at half time and then they played better in the second half. I wouldn't say it was embarrassing, but yeah, there could have been a couple behind.
And so much was made of that as well, John, wasn't it? That is this a sign that England are, you know, together because Gareth Southgate can leave them in a room and they're capable of saying to each other that they didn't think they were playing very well?
Well, yeah, the fact that he always leaves them for 2 minutes on their own to have a little chat was kind of interesting. I wonder how many times he wanders in and it's just silent, so they've just been waiting for 2 minutes for him to turn up. I guess so, and I guess it does suggest that they're because that Southgate has got sort of shut of a few of the older sort of established guys of the last decade. There's perhaps a more of a collegiate kind of approach to it where everybody can have a voice and they're not just relying on one or two characters to have their say. I think it's quite a good thing that if the one thing, the real positive to come out of the Switzerland game was that the players are prepared to have a go at each other, and there is that dynamic there.
I'm wondering one thing, if we are not also in that game, we didn't see the first effects of this very strange juxtaposition of a game which is a competitive game and a game which is a friendly within the same window, a few days from away from each other. And from what I saw of the international action since the beginning of the break, it's quite clear that the competitive nature of the Nations League has been established from the first second of the first game, and that therefore it's a completely different frame of mind. You've played a proper game against Spain, and it was a proper game, and then suddenly this game which is of no importance whatsoever. And psychologically, I'm wondering if that also didn't have an impact, certainly in the way they started the game, that thought, well, actually, this doesn't really matter at all.
Yeah, it did seem slightly nigglier than most friendlies, though. It seemed like there was a bit more kicking. That may be just because Lischteiner was on the pitch. I'm not sure. Paul Tisdale was on the radio, Barry, this week, talking about the FA rejecting Ethan Ampadu. I'm not suggesting he's the shiny centre midfielder that we've been crying out for, and we've let him go to Wales, or England have let him go to Wales, but it was still interesting in what Paul was saying.
Yeah, well, he had seen, I think, Ampadu playing for Exeter's, their under-18s, and got onto the FA and said, "Guy, you got to check this guy out, get him involved underage."
I think when he was 14.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was before he'd appeared for their first team. I think he made his senior appearance in League Two when he was 15, which is quite a tough league to be thrown into at that age. But somebody at the FA apparently said, no, we've got 12 players better than him. And bizarrely, their criticism of him, they said, we have watched him, but he doesn't take enough touches on the ball, which I find absolutely remarkable. I would have thought that is a good thing. But I did notice, I just checked today, he did represent England once at under 16, mm-hmm. or under 15 or under 16
under
level.
16.
So they obviously hadn't completely ignored him. But I don't know what made him change to Wales. Then he played under 17 for Wales. And, he was also eligible for Ireland. I don't know if Ireland even were aware of that.
And for Ghana as well.
But yeah, it just smacks of arrogance at FAHQ. But as I say, he did go on to represent England under 16, so they clearly didn't reject him completely out of hand.
Mm. And then there's Ben Woodburn as well, which England could have taken. Brooks as well.
There is a presumption here sometimes that these players all want to represent England. They may not, you may consider themselves Welsh. I don't know in these individual cases, but a lot of times, Gareth Bale could possibly, is he eligible for England? He just didn't want
I don't to. Think he is now.
I asked, was he? But yeah, they may not want to play for England.
Could you qualify for both, Barry?
No. Oh, I think, I think I've been here long enough to become a UK citizen.
Oh, like Carlo Cudicini, we could get you in.
Yeah. So I wouldn't do it. So sorry,
Gareth.
I'm taking my hat out of the ring.
S. Thompson says, with the enviable debate over England's lack of midfield creativity, has everyone forgotten Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain will be back? And with the season he had last year, he can only get better.
It's not really what you would call a creative midfielder. It's more somebody who is very direct. Actually, a kind of player that England, I think, is missing as well. It's very direct in the way he carries the ball, very fast. And he's also developing very quickly under Jurgen Klopp. But he's not a creative player as such. Mm. To be honest, I mean, creative players in the old mould are far and few between in international football at the moment. There aren't that many. There aren't many Luka Modrics around.
In England's Nations League group, Spain 6, Croatia 0.
Yeah.
So does this mean losing 2-1 to Spain wasn't that bad? Or does it mean Croatia aren't that good and England should have got to the World Cup final? Or does it mean that different football matches are different and we try and read too much into everything?
I think we probably do. It's a lovely trope. I always kind of, my team beats your team, and then if your team beats that team, that means my team is better than that team.
Yeah. There's actually a World Cup, isn't there? A parallel World Cup, which is you take every single game ever played since the original Scotland-England game, and you derive the name of the champion by who beat whom in the last game.
Yeah, yeah.
And who is the current holder?
I don't know.
We'll have to find out.
I know Scotland were champions of that particular World Cup for quite a while in the sort of mid-90s.
But Spain were... some of their goals were glorious. Asensio was so good as well, wasn't he?
Yeah, and there is a thing as well that you could say that Croatia just threw in the towel at one point, 3-0 down. They said, there's no way we're going to... I mean, it's not just Asensio. Every single goal, Isco's goal was not bad either. And it's actually very interesting to see how more dynamic this Spanish team already seems to be under new management, and seems to have actually changed its style. I mean, they're still able to do the passing to death almost, as they did against England, certainly beginning of the second half. But they're also able to be very, very, to cut through a defence, I think, much more easily and much more directly than they used to be. And with new players, with Rodrigo, for example, and the fact that Asensio is now in the team for good and so forth, very, very impressive. But the quality of the goals as well had something to do with it. When you have people scoring, how many screamers out of the six? Three? Something like that. That certainly puts a different sheen on the result.
While we're remaining hypothetical, does this show what Spain could have done in the World Cup if they hadn't had that managerial change just beforehand?
Fair question.
What's the answer?
Has anybody got an answer?
No. France are the unofficial world champions. because they just won the World Cup and they retained it against Germany and the Netherlands.
Yes.
So well done, Philippe.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Fantastic. Playing very much like they've been playing during the World Cup. It's nothing. The game against Germany was particularly difficult to watch.
Still Deschamps out?
I really am still as frustrated as I've been for a very long time, in as much that, you think that with this team it should be possible to do better. And that perhaps we actually made heavy weather of...
They did win the World Cup.
No, but in terms of style of play, I know. It's not all about the results, but also about the process, as Marcelo Bielsa says. And against Germany, it was a bit of a chore to watch that. And against Netherlands, while no great shakes, it was not utterly convincing. Did you see that Ryan Babel scored?
Oh yeah, we talked about it for... you didn't listen to Monday's pod. It was a Ryan Babel...
Unbelievable.
I know.
Glorious. How old is he? I haven't checked.
73.
Mm. But anyway, the recipe which took France to the title and to a Euro final, let's not forget, is in place and for a while. So what can you say? I was more interested to see what Germany had to offer, and to see if there had been changes, and I didn't see anything that made me think that there was a huge tsunami of change coming Yogi Löw's way, and a bit under underwhelming all of this, really.
I'd like to apologise. I just heard myself inhaling, and it was quite loud. Ryan Babel is 31, only 31. Sure, we had this chat for a year last year when he was only 30. Anyway, Ireland drew in Poland, Barry. Not a bad result. Could have been better because it was a late equaliser. That is not really where the entertainment is, though. It's Stephen Ward's leaked WhatsApps.
Yeah, but Stephen Ward... I'm guessing because it would have taken too long to write a text explaining what happened, he just recorded a WhatsApp for the benefit of his mates who were all being nosy about what was going on with Roy Keane, Harry Arthur and John Walters. And so Stephen Ward, it's like I wrote in the Fiverr the other day, you have stress dreams about being chased by a shark or waking up unprepared for an important exam or
in the rubble
or
just for context, John Ashdown's ceiling fell in when
Tuesday night.
You were out
And my girlfriend was very much in bed,
and she's still covered in rubble,
still very dusty.
Okay, fine. As Barry said,
that's a new nickname.
The earth moved for you, John, but or for her, but you weren't there at the time. Anyway, Barry.
Yeah, so he recorded this... So we've all had these stress dreams, and then you wake up and you're terrified and you're sweating and you're shaking, and then you realise, oh, thank God, it's everything's okay. And it's almost, the relief almost makes the night terrors worthwhile. But Stephen Ward now finds himself living this stress dream where he wakes up after a dream where he's left a WhatsApp being really critical of Roy Keane, and then realises he's left a WhatsApp message that was really critical of Roy Keane. So it could have been a lot worse. He just gave a description of what happened. Roy Keane, I'm sure everyone's heard it by now, but Roy Keane was critical of John Walters and Harry Arthur for sitting out training sessions with their manager's blessing, because let's not forget, Roy Keane isn't actually the manager of the Republic of Ireland.
He wasn't, according to Stephen Ward's account, he wasn't mildly critical.
He effed and jeffed and called them every name under the sun. And this is the same Roy Keane who, in his autobiography, said that he'd spent too long during his career playing through injury, and if he hadn't, he'd perhaps have had a longer career. You know, and he cited Ruud van Nistelrooy as someone who wouldn't play through injury, wouldn't play through the pain barrier, and he said maybe the foreign lads were right. But, you know, Roy's very much a do-as-I-say, not-as-I-do kind of man-manager or man-assistant manager, and he's sort of becoming a parody of himself at this stage. What we did learn from the WhatsApp message, and it's a second-hand account from Stephen Ward because he wasn't there at the time and was lucky enough to get a foot injury, which meant he didn't have to be there to face the music when the WhatsApp message was leaked. But it's a second-hand account, but no one's really surprised that Roy Keane's prowling the corridors of the team hotel, ranting and raving at people, and you know, like some Jack Nicholson in The Shining.
It's half between that and Father Jack. Just imagine if he never got into football, he'd just be that man in the
Father
pub.
Father Jack Nicholson.
He's slightly becoming a parody of himself, and as I said before, people in Ireland are think it's a tired regime. Not sure the FAI can afford to sack them, but that's a whole different kettle of fish. But, it's not great, is it? John Walters clearly isn't afraid of Roy Keane.
What I found extraordinary was the defence used by Martin O'Neill afterwards, where he basically said he was a great captain with Manchester United, with the Neville brothers and David Beckham. Thinking, what's it got to do with what's just happened in the Republic's hotel? What's it got to do? I don't know. Is it relevant to it?
No, well, the thing is,
seems absurd.
O'Neill as well. He didn't seem surprised or angry or bothered particularly. He just sort of thought, well, yeah, that's you know, the person, really. Very strange.
Dion Fanning, a friend of mine who writes for Joe, very respected Irish journalist, he wrote an interesting piece last week in which, you know, Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane, there's a huge Brian Clough influence on both of them, you know. They both played for Clough for a long time. And they keep citing Cloughy in stories and anecdotes about, you know, when they're confronted with, you know, accusations that their players aren't good enough or whatever. And Dion wrote that, you know, most of these players probably don't know who Brian Clough is, yeah. You know, and it's just not a pertinent thing to cite as an example anymore, and he may well have a point. I think their time has passed.
I'd quite like to. Well, would I like to? There's just something about. I'd quite like to spend an extended amount of time with Roy Keane just to see at what point he cracked.
I don't think I would.
Will you come on if I organise a mini break?
I spent 30 of the most excruciatingly, not embarrassing, toe-curling minutes of my life watching a football game with Roy Keane at Lords when he was in the green room. He was about to present his autobiography with Roddy Doyle, and he had the remote control, and I was terrified just looking at his neck. So the answer to your proposal is no.
Northern Ireland 3, Israel 0. Gavin White scored 106 seconds after coming off the bench with his first touch. And his mother, Patricia, missed it because she was on holiday. My mum will be over the moon. I think she's travelling. I'll send her the highlights, he said. But that's a good result for Northern Ireland, isn't it, Barry?
Yeah, and no more than they deserved after completely dominating Bosnia and Herzegovina only to somehow lose. So, yeah. But I was very impressed with them against Bosnia. I didn't see that game, so...
Yeah, I kind of saw it. It was sort of on in the background, and they did. They dominated, and you know, 3-0 was certainly not flattering.
Under the rubble, that's what it was. Everything, and a good win for Scotland as well over Albania. And we said this on Monday. They absolutely needed to win this game. And I was listening to Alex McLeish talking last night, saying you know they could have played easier games. I think they played Mexico in Mexico. I think they played Peru. In Lima, and then they played Belgium. So they could have chosen easier fixtures. They chose not to have them, and this is the game that they needed to win, Philip.
Yes, and I thought they won, I would say impressively, but quite convincingly. I mean, Naismith in the goals at the age of... He's the same age as Ryan Babel. Can you believe it?
Is that right?
He is. He is, absolutely. You would think he's about... I don't know. But no, I thought that was... what I saw of the game was actually quite encouraging as well, the way they were trying to play. And certainly not the kind of football that you would necessarily associate with McLeish, if you remember the very dour defensive teams that he had at club level. I thought this was a little bit more enterprising from Scotland. So, excellent.
In defence of Alex McLeish, Philippe, I would argue that it's something of a myth that all his club teams play defensive football. I think he tends to cut his cloth according to his measure, and towards the end at Villa and Birmingham, they were very defensive sides, but it hasn't always been the case with him. He's not the dinosaur he's sort of portrayed as. It's kind of an unfair, I think.
You love Alex McLeish.
I just think he's a very nice guy, and he's a more enlightened football man than he's given credit for.
All right. No, I'll agree. I've met him on a number of occasions, and I like him.
And so do I. And so say all of us.
John?
I don't think I've ever... I'm trying to think if I've ever met him. Probably not. Well, no, I must have been in a press conference with him at some point.
If we have the camping holiday with Roy Keane, we'll bring Alex McLeish as well.
I'd like that, yeah.
Yep. Okay, marvellous. That'll do for part one. In part two, we'll look back at a few of the other international games. Welcome to part two. Next Wednesday, Barry, we're at the Rockefeller in Oslo. Me, you, Wilson and Lars.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, if you're Norwegian, come. Well, actually, we're not discriminating. You don't have to be Norwegian. If you're near Oslo, come. Oh, actually, we're not discriminating there.
John Arden Riise said he might come.
He did, didn't he? I sent a tweet which included Jan Åge Fjørtoft and John Arden Riise, and Jan Åge Fjørtoft is working, so he can't make it. And Riise seems very keen. I don't know what that'll do to our budget. We may not get paid.
I also put a shout out for Egil Olsen and Øyvind Lienardsen.
Excellent.
Because they were the only two Norwegian.
Ole Gunnar Solskjær.
Yeah, Solskjær could come. Erik Bakker, if we're really struggling.
If you get one of the flows to come, you might be able to get four or five flows in total.
What about Rune Hauger?
That's a very good idea. This is going to be a... Now, the audience are going to know when we run out of Norwegians to talk about, aren't they? So, yes, please come to that. And if you're nearer London, the 29th of November, me, Barry Wilson and TBC will be at the Emmanuel Centre on November the 29th. Dennis Cheryshev, you've seen this story, Barney? Barry? Barney? That's just wishful thinking from me. scored four goals for Russia at the World Cup. Scored some lovely goals, didn't he?
Yeah.
He's under investigation for an alleged doping violation.
Yeah, the Spanish anti-doping lot are investigating after his father seems to have accidentally dobbed him in, or perhaps deliberately, I don't know. In an interview, he said that before the World Cup, he was given human growth hormone to treat an injury.
Can think of a few others who were given that.
The Russian FA have said that it was kind of lost in translation. He was, in fact, given a platelet-rich plasma injection, which was entirely legal. Now, you know, Russia obviously have a lot of form in the field of doping their players, so this is another red flag. And it should be noted that, you know, after the first two games of the World Cup, in the players who had run the most, covered the most ground in all the matches, Russia had the top three and four in the top 11, I think. So yeah, it's not a huge surprise to hear this, but it's possible that his father was misquoted.
Does human growth hormone make you grow? I mean, this is a dumb question, because Tereshev seems quite short. Let me check. He's 5'10". So, you know.
Well, it's an anabolic steroid, isn't it? So
it would be a really misleading name. It made you shrink.
But it doesn't make you taller, does it? I mean, it makes you bigger, right?
Yeah, I would guess.
I believe it's on the record that it was used when Leo Messi arrived in Spain, and they had doubts, you know, he had growth problems, and they used it at that point in his life to facilitate his growth to the stature that he's now. So it makes you grow, but not an awful lot.
True. Makes you wonder how tiny Messi would be.
Well, I mean, look, we all titter at Russia for, you know, and assume they're doped up to the eyeballs, but they certainly wouldn't be the first football team to have done it, and they don't have a monopoly on drug abuse. But yeah, there are a lot of red flags. And remember, just before the World Cup, FIFA sort of swept an investigation into their behaviour at the 2014 World Cup under the carpet.
I think the interesting thing is there are sports we look at and we just presume everyone's on drugs.
Cycling,
weightlifting, athletics. And there are sports we watch, football, cricket, golf, where we don't think anyone's on drugs. And we'd be pretty naive to think there isn't one footballer who is taking drugs and who is beating the system.
Don't forget, you know, in Operation Puerto, that sort of did for a load of cyclists, the doctor in question was rumoured to have two separate fridges in his office because the blood bags of players from two high-profile Spanish teams couldn't be kept in the same fridge, such as their contempt for each other.
Other interesting Nations League results. Portugal 1, Italy 0, Sweden 2, Turkey 3. Sorry,
Italy looked absolutely appalling. I mean, I was astonished. Even, you know, we know that they've come through a very, very bad phase at the moment. But even then, this is not an absolutely fantastic Portugal team that they were playing against, but they were absolutely rubbish. And the final scoreline doesn't reflect...
And is that a lack of players? Is that a lack?
I think it's a lack of there's a lack of players in the moment. Absolutely. Talk about England looking for, you know, the fabled midfielder which can do everything. I think Italy is a bit in the same position, but that also goes for their strike force, their defence, and perhaps not their keeper, Amanda Donnarumma.
So you thought Jorginho actually is the kind of guy that England need, isn't it? So maybe they've got that. They just don't. We've got the rest of it.
But they didn't look good at all, and they were put under an awful lot of pressure by a Portuguese team that could have scored many more.
Sweden 2, Turkey 3. Sweden were 2-0 up in this game. And actually, Nick Ames writes a piece in the paper today saying that this is a sign of how the Nations League is a good thing. Here's a game that if Sweden were 2 up and it was a meaningless friendly, they'd both make 8 substitutions. No one would care. But as it is, you know, Turkey went for the win. They made a couple of changes and it really helped them.
And yeah, it seemed. I mean, I live not far away from a big Turkish area in North London, and after the game, you could hear the unmistakable sound of Turkish fans honking their horns and partying sort of in the street. Which
also because you've got a hole in your roof.
But that suggests that they're bothered about it, which is good.
Georgi Hagi's son scored direct from a corner for Romania. It's interesting because I can't remember who I saw on Twitter saying, and that's no fluke, by the way, as if somebody's been watching Georgi Hagi's son taking corners and scoring from them on a regular basis. Maybe he has, but I tend to think any goal direct from a corner, there is quite a lot of luck involved. I don't know if anyone wants to take me to task on that.
I'm trying to think of one which was scored on purpose. Ronaldinho?
Yes, but there's huge amount of luck. I mean, you could try and put it under the bar, sure, but you can't. It's not like a direct free kick.
Mm.
Yeah, you're sort of relying on the keeper to make a bit of a balls of profit, aren't you? Either way.
Yeah. On Tuesday, Iceland 0, Belgium 3. Have the wheels come off Iceland? They got hammered by Switzerland. Is this the end of Iceland as a footballing nation? End of the clap. Poor choice of words. It's good news in other. It's good news in another context, isn't it?
Sorry, wait, it's the end of an era. Genuinely, because you had the two-headed bicephalus management team of Iceland, which then became. Then there were one, and then there were none. So the people who are at the root of the success of the national team have now gone, and so there's a big hole to fill there. So perhaps that's quite understandable. And also, Aaron Gunnarsson was not playing either, who is a very important person in the dressing room, the captain. And so you take away your captain, you take away your national team manager. That's a lot for a small country like that.
Group D is fun, isn't it? That's almost the most fun part of the whole of the Nations League experience, to see who is better out of San Marino and Luxembourg. We never knew.
League D, not Group D.
Oh, sorry, League D. Yes, it's League D, you know, with a different group number to make it sound like battleships. Luxembourg won 3-0 away at San Marino. I guess you could have predicted that. I mean, I confess this is at the end of my footballing knowledge, but I just presume because they're slightly bigger. Moldova 0, Belarus 0. Kosovo 2, the Faroes 0.
First ever victory for Kosovo.
Yeah, and that it's just great for these countries that they actually get to play a game that's competitive. And
and what you almost wish is that the final tournament, which takes place in June with the winners of League A, would also be a tournament for the other leagues, so that those small nations have a genuine trophy to fight for. And I know that sounds a little bit condescending, sorry, but I'm sure that it would be welcomed by those nations. The chance of something which really winning something which really means something.
Andorra 1, Kazakhstan 1. Adam says, after George Weah's 79 minutes on the pitch for Liberia, which other current world leaders could do a job at international level?
Well, it's a different sport, but I'd quite like to see Donald Trump go out and play an NFL game, see how he'd get on.
Actually, I mean, he's a golfer, though. He'd be in the Ryder Cup. I'm surprised he hasn't managed to somehow get himself into the Ryder Cup team. Yeah. Putin could, you know.
And the judo team, yeah, Putin.
Yeah, or the Greco-Roman wrestling. He could do all of it,
yeah,
couldn't he?
Of course, you've got Ramzan Kadyrov, the dictator from Chechnya, mm-hmm. who's already played for Chechnya in those kind of arranged games that he has with Brazilian footballers who want loads of money and not to look at human rights records.
Mm. And Justin Trudeau's quite fit. He can do a one-arm press-up, so mm-hmm. he could do something. Yeah, so George Weah played for his country on...
Why did he play?
Liberia had arranged the friendly to retire the number 14 shirt, which is the shirt that Weah wore at his peak for Liberia. He played 79 minutes of a 2-1 home defeat by Nigeria. Nigeria had Wilfred Ndidi playing. Kelechi Iheanacho came on off the bench. Peter Otebo plays for Stoke. He played. So it's not just interesting.
It sort of reminds me a little bit of, do you remember the Doncaster chairman, John Ryan, a few years ago? He's still the oldest person to play in the Football League because he played at the age of 52 at the end of a game a few years ago for the first team. And I think there's a guy in China who owns the club and plays for sort of Shanghai Shenhua and spent the second half up alongside a slightly bemused looking Nicholas Anelka.
Although the stat, and I did tweet it out, I really enjoyed, is George Weah is the only political leader to have scored 3 times against Gillingham.
There was the Kadhafi son and heir, of course, who didn't play for Juve.
Who, sorry? Oh, Gaddafi, yeah.
Yeah, Gaddafi's son, yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, it's possible. You can be a world leader and quite good at sport. Mm. Sad news from France, Philippe. I don't know if you saw this story. The William Gomez, the Saint-Étienne player, shot dead at just 19 years of age. According to reports in France, he was killed in a shooting alongside a 14-year-old boy at Le Saint-Sur-Mer on the Côte d'Azur on Sunday night. Circumstances surrounding his sudden death are unknown. Apparently, his brother also died from gunshot wounds only a few weeks before his death. So very sad news from France. That'll do for part two. In part three, the Premier League is back. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly Extra. The Premier League returns, and how? Saturday morning, the early kickoff. Well, it is the afternoon by the time it kicks off, but the early kickoff, however you want to think about it. Spurs versus Liverpool is the game of the weekend, Barry.
I don't think it is.
Do you not?
No.
Why not?
Because I think Watford Man U is.
Ooh,
but
yes, that's a big one too.
We'll go Spurs Liverpool first of all. Spurs obviously hoping to bounce back after their surprise defeat at the hands of Watford, and it's certainly a mouth-watering fixture with which to get the weekend underway, and a very tough one to call. Spurs obviously have Son back from his Asian Cup heroics, and he won't be clumping around an army camp in fatigues. And it'll be interesting, you know, him or Lucas Moura, who gets the shout. You'd have to say Moura on current form. It'd be hard to leave him out. But, yeah, it's going to be a very interesting game, and not one I could predict with any smidgen of confidence.
You could probably predict it won't be 4-1 to Spurs as it was last year. That was sort of Dejan Lovren's horror show. The interesting news about Hugo Lloris: fined £50,000, banned from driving for 20 months. He admitted drink driving. He had vomit in his car when he was stopped by officers on the 24th of August as he drove through Marylebone.
But was it his, to quote from Spinal Tap?
We don't know that for sure. But
there was somebody else in the car with him.
That's true. Just vomiting next to him. They had to help the goalkeeper from his car. The debate this week is, should he remain Tottenham captain?
Why not? That's what the question I'm asking. Why not? He did a very silly thing. But at least he didn't drive his Porsche at 200 miles an hour on the motorway. He was actually doing 15 miles an hour in a 20-mile-an-hour zone, which is why people started to think there's something wrong here. This car shouldn't be driving slowly and so erratically. But why should he be punished by... He's already been punished. The fine he got for what he did for a first offence was extremely high, simply because he's a footballer.
Well, the fine you get is commensurate with what you earn, your gross weekly wage. So
yeah,
his fine was perfectly fair.
Okay.
I would say his punishment was probably too lenient. And I definitely think he should be stripped of the captaincy. Because
why is that exactly?
Well, I'll give you one example. And Daniel Storey mentioned it in an article he wrote yesterday on Football 365. Because... kids will say to their parents, and I know this is going to be, oh, won't someone think of the children, but why isn't he captain anymore? And their parents will go, because he did a bad thing, and he has to be punished.
This, you know, in which case it doesn't become, it's not a punishment anymore. It's a moral lesson taken through somebody who is then used as a tool for a moral lesson. And that is actually against, I mean, that for me, that just doesn't work. Why should he be treated differently? He's been punished quite heavily by his club as well. He certainly is also somebody who has no
previous
whatsoever.
I don't think he has, to be honest. The guy was buckled. Like, he wasn't just over the limit. He was smashed. He could hardly stand.
He was twice over the limit, yes.
So...
I mean, it's not...
I have no sympathy for anyone who gets done for drink driving. And, yeah, he made a mistake. And he seems to be quite contrite. And, I mean, you know, fine. I don't think any less of him as a man for what's happened. We all... mess up from time to time, but and the captaincy isn't even that important. It doesn't really matter who the captain is, but it would make a statement, you know, we are not prepared to condone this kind of behaviour, and that's all.
Yeah, it does raise an interesting question about what we expect, what standards we expect from players, and you know, where does the line come? I mean, you sort of look back over the years of various toilet stealings and sort of illegal japes, that kind of level, or you know, you go up towards the sort of Lee Hughes kind of level, and where is the line between when somebody can be a captain or can't be a captain, or can be a player and can't be a player? You know, it's an ongoing debate, and it's good that we actually have the debate, which I think perhaps in the past we probably, you know, 10 years, 15 years ago, it might not have even been even considered an issue.
The argument of footballers as role models, I mean, is complete. Anyway, and also I think the offence of drink driving is appalling.
Well, it's an offence that I think is treated far too leniently anyway. He just happens to be a high profile person who got caught, and so he's in the spotlight. People get caught drink driving every single day of the week. You know, I don't think he should lose his job, but.
But you're lucky you don't drive into a person, right? That's the point. If he's that wasted, you know, he's got no control.
He was clearly smashed.
And when you talk about somebody who was a much more serious case of drink driving, like for Tony Adams, do you think that he should have been stripped of the captaincy forever after he had done time in jail?
Probably, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, the thing is, the captaincy isn't actually that important.
It is in England. I mean, it is not perhaps elsewhere.
But apparently it's quite important to Hugo Lloris, and he's apparently kicked off in the past because he didn't get the captaincy elsewhere. So, yeah, maybe take it off.
To be fair, they did give it to Yunus Kabul, so that's why he was disappointed. Watford-Manchester United, Barry, the game of the weekend.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this because it's two really contrasting teams. They're both decent teams. But in Watford, you've got, and Javi Gracia, you've got a manager who absolutely knows who his best team is and picks the same 11, injury and suspension permitting, every time. They work together. They're all pulling in the one direction. They seem to have really bought into his philosophy. That's in one corner. And then in the other corner, you've got a manager who doesn't appear to have a notion what his best 11 is. Some of them are pulling in totally different directions to others. And I think for Jose Mourinho, who obviously is under a bit of pressure, this is probably the one fixture he really, really didn't want, because away at Watford, Manchester United with fans around the world, maybe who haven't seen that much of Watford, will be expecting United to win this comfortably, and I don't think they will at all. I think they're going to have all sorts of problems from Watford. They may well beat them, but it's a fascinating fixture at this stage of the season.
Interestingly, Luke Shaw could play a week after suffering concussion.
Well, if he does, that is a disgrace.
The Football Association guidelines state a player who suffers concussion should not play for 14 days. Yeah. He could play after being treated in United's, quote, enhanced care setting. The guidelines
that is rubbish.
The guidelines allow a player to return earlier if 7 criteria are met, and United's state-of-the-art medical facilities are understood to meet the requirements.
I would be intrigued to know how people or facilities at United state-of-the-art medical care facility seem more better qualified to judge if Luke Shaw is fit to play after suffering a concussion than, say, an eminent neuroscientist or specialist who you know, if he plays, that would be an absolute disgrace.
Barry, in this case, talk about setting an example as well. Yeah. So what prevents other clubs saying, well, we also have this absolutely state-of-the-art, you know, means we can do all these brain scans, we've got all the specialists, and actually, you know, 2 weeks. If 2 weeks was decided, it's because there was a very good medical reason to have the 2 weeks. So if Manchester United indeed have the capacity to make a player play safely after 7 days, well, guys, share it with everybody then.
It does seem strange that, given, you know, you look at rugby clubs who where concussion is a much more prevalent sort of injury. You know, they always have to have 2 weeks off after a concussion.
Also jockeys.
Yeah, yeah. You'd imagine in a sport, perhaps, I suppose the money perhaps isn't there, but in a sport where concussions are a constant every match, you might have these state-of-the-art facilities to get players back quicker.
The only way they can do it is if their enhanced care setting slows time down for Luke Shaw. So he's in a room where he's aging twice the amount. You know, he just goes... Is it slow down time?
Accelerate time.
It accelerates time, does it? So he comes out
it certainly has had this effect on Jose Mourinho, for whose time seems to have accelerated, judging by the way it looks.
He's accidentally gone into his enhanced care setting. Yeah, I mean, it seems utterly ludicrous. Chelsea-Cardiff, according to Sport Bild, in Germany, FIFA are looking into limiting the number of players a team can loan out to 8.
8, yeah.
So Chelsea currently have 40 players out on loan. Batshuayi, Bakayoko, Kurt Zouma, Kennedy, Tammy Abraham, Lewis Baker, Mason Mount. I won't read the rest of them, but a bucket of younger players.
We should add that Chelsea are not the only club who actually are using, and I think abusing, the loan system at the moment. If you look, I'm looking at the list of Manchester City players who are currently loaned out. It's quite extraordinary. I'm not even going to count them, but it's an awful lot. I mean, most of them are players from the academy rather than the players from the first team.
So loaning is good for a young player to go to a smaller club and get experience.
Well, yeah, a loan can be fantastic for a young player to actually acquire the experience that, you know, you need to play when you're
Harry
between 18.
Kane at Millwall,
exactly.
And Leicester, etc.
You could take many examples of that kind. You could say Dele Alli. Actually, who stayed, didn't he? And he was a loanee at MK Dons after he signed for Tottenham.
Right, yeah.
He stayed there so he could have game experience. It's different when it becomes a systemic approach to poaching all the young players, loaning them buying them, loaning them out, seeing which ones don't make the grade, the ones don't make the grade, bugger off, not interested in you. It completely, I mean, that's not an even playing field for the clubs. They're able basically to have, I don't know, I mean, it's just ridiculous. Players of City are loaned out to Lens, Leeds United, Breda, West Brom, Preston, Hibs, Girona, Celtic, Tubisa, New York City, Red Star, Belgrade, Groningen. It goes on and on and on. That's not, that cannot be good.
I guess the idea for then to reduce it would be to prevent teams from stockpiling,
at the
one club. The problem you have is that with ownership models these days, what you'd end up, I imagine, with is club groups essentially signing young players. So with City, have very strong links with Girona through Pep's brother, I think that's right.
Pere.
Would there be anything in the rules then to stop them from simply buying young players at Girona? As with an understanding that eventually they move on to City if required. You know, I think there'd be loopholes that they'd find.
There's a really interesting story about David Hurst's son.
Yeah,
I don't know if you saw this, who Leicester really wanted. And it's a slightly different, it's similar, but slightly different. It's about compensation. But instead of going to Leicester, has gone to, has been sold for nothing or has gone without tribunal to
Leuven, I think it is.
Yes, somewhere.
In Belgium.
Somewhere in Belgium. And then who coincidentally are owned by the same people that own Leicester City. So, yeah, you imagine they would find loopholes, but I guess you close loopholes and you keep closing them. And
yeah, I guess.
Other fixtures, Man City, Fulham, Bournemouth, Leicester, Huddersfield, Palace and Newcastle, Arsenal on Saturday. Wolves, Burnley, Everton, West Ham on Sunday. Barry, that waste of money Richarlison scored twice on his first start for Brazil.
I heard.
As they beat El Salvador 5-0 at the FedEx Field in Maryland. One of them was a glorious goal. In more Everton news, and giving me a chance to do my best Jim White, their major shareholder and investor, the Monaco-based Fahad Mashiri, has taken ownership of the club above 50% with the purchase of a further 18.7% of the shares. What does this mean, Philippe? Is it good for the fans?
Don't know if it's good or bad for the fans. What is interesting is how it follows so quickly on the heels of Alisher Usmanov relinquishing his shares from Arsenal Football Club, and that just by chance, Fahad Mashiri is always referred as British Iranian. You will remark that as Boris Johnson is never referred as the British American, but never mind. So Fahad Mashiri is very much the right-hand man of Alisher Usmanov, or partner, or business partner. So many people think that it is what we've been talking about for a long time, which is Everton in the long term will become, through Mashiri, Alisher Usmanov's thing. Which, if you're a fan and you want money poured into the team, might be very good news. If you think that people like Alisher Usmanov should be nowhere near a football club, that's not very good news at all.
On Monday?
To sit on the fence.
That's fine.
By the way, you mentioned Wolves, about the loans. I just counted Wolves. I've got 29 players on loan at the moment. And we know the links of Wolves, even though we are told that they are very loose links with, as well, the company, the Chinese company in which Jorge Mendes has got a share, which is basically a placement agency for young players. So I'm not saying anything wrong or untoward or illegal is going on here, but it's certainly a system that needs a bit of tightening.
In other football news, John Terry, Barry, is not going to Spartak Moscow.
Yeah, I heard that. He revealed the news on Instagram in a very peculiar font that looked more like a birthday card or something, but apparently it's family reasons, and I've no
feelings about it either way.
No, one way or the other.
Slightly odd to get that far down the line towards it and then ask your family about whether they fancy living in Moscow or not.
Sunderland, meanwhile, Barry, have terminated Papi Gilabogi's contract. They said the Senegal centre-half waited until this month before reporting back for pre-season training and then failed the fitness test.
Well, he was given a month's leave of absence during the summer to try and find himself a new club because they want to get him off the payroll. He's on 30 grand a week. Didier Ndong is also in the same boat. He failed to find himself a new club and then failed to report back for training. He eventually did over a month late, and was given a routine fitness test to see if he was in good enough shape to train and play with the first team, and apparently failed it convincingly. It was a spectacular failure, the fitness test. Hardly surprising if he hasn't trained for like since May. And yeah, so they've given him notice that he's going to be sacked. He may appeal. I don't know.
The chairman, Stuart Donald, said they might sue him and Didier and Dong.
Yeah, well, Didier, at least Gilabogi did eventually come back. Didier Ndong, who's the club's record signing, still hasn't come back, reported back for pre-season.
No, he recently posted Instagram pictures of himself relaxing by a swimming pool, which has since been deleted.
The swimming pool has been deleted.
The swimming pool is no more.
Pepe Gilabogi, who cost something like 4 million quid to Chelsea when they bought him from Nantes, which certainly got tongues wagging at the time in France, because really? Well, and who played, I think, something like 4 minutes for Chelsea when he came in the League Cup game against Walsall in added time, and that was the beginning and the end of his career with the Blues.
Sunderland paid about 8 million for him or something.
Yeah, 8 million. But they have, quite a long list of previous when it comes to sacking players. Adam Johnson, obviously, who's still in prison. And Darren Gibson, they sacked last season because he got done for drink driving. I think, serial offender on that front. And he demolished half a street. So, and now the two boys. So, yeah, maybe the recruitment process isn't all it should be.
It's quite interesting because the chairman was saying that he's basically going to sue them for deliberately trying to devalue themselves. Which I don't quite know how sacking him helps with that situation.
We don't have to deliberately try and do that. It just happens naturally, doesn't it? Finally, Josh says, would you rather fight a bear or 19 pigeons? If the answer is the pigeons, how many pigeons would it take to consider the bear? And I sent this to the rolling WhatsApp group for whoever's on the pod. And Philippe, you replied with, I've been attacked by a bear, so the pigeons. So I did not know this. I don't know if you knew this.
No.
I'd like to hear the story about Philippe Auclair being attacked by a bear.
A long time ago, my brother, a friend, and I went to Canada to shoot a wildlife documentary in the Rocky Mountains. And we went to Jasper National Park, beautiful place. We set up our tent with the agreement of the park wardens. And to cut a very long story short, we were woken up in the tent. I will always remember that. It's a quite traumatic experience. The sun shining so we could see what was, behind the fabric.
What, the silhouette of a bear.
And we saw the paws of the bleeding thing leaning against the tent and going back and forth. And think, what on earth is that? And we knew that it was bear country, obviously, and we knew how to behave, which means that I had a small axe. And my friend had kind of looking like a baseball bat, and so we tried to scare the thing out, ran out of the of the tent,
and it was Roy Keane going, "You forgot your fucking pegs."
Are you meant to run at the bear? Is that the tactic?
No, I mean in this particular case, it was a black bear. It was not of those massive grizzlies. In which case, I would probably not be doing the. I would be like Leonardo DiCaprio in the Revenant. I would still be trying to find my way back to base camp. In this particular case, it was a smaller black bear, but I can tell you they're pretty scary anyway. We managed to scare it off by making loads of noise and, jumping about. And then we realized that our car had been attacked as well. And our Chevy had been, she had smashed the windscreen, got in, eaten all our food, eaten my pack of cards, one of my anoraks, two bars of soap. So we still managed to drive out, went to the warden's, the office, explained what happened. They basically fenced the whole area. And then the bear had gone completely amok, which happens sometimes. And the poor thing had to be tranquilized and taken away. But we had a fantastic sequence for our film because we filmed a whole lot.
So there is footage of you chasing a bear with an axe.
Not me, of us screaming and trying to scare the bear off, the three of us.
Of course, in a situation like that,
if
you're being chased by a bear, you only have to be faster than one of the two people you're with rather than faster than the bear.
That's a very good point.
Which one of you is so dedicated to the documentary that said, start filming, get the white balance,
as soon as we saw that the car had been smashed, we took the camera and started filming because the bear was still circling around. And
at the time with the paws on.
Yeah, that wouldn't have crossed my mind, but so I would choose the pigeons anytime.
Yeah, but 19 pigeons all pecking at your eyes,
like Are you thinking of the... I think of the Mel Brooks film. You know, anyway, high anxiety, wasn't it?
It's fascinating to learn about the members of the pod. And congratulations on surviving the bear attack, Philippe.
Yes. And she survived too, which is good. She wasn't shot dead. She was just tranquilized.
Are you sure?
I'm absolutely positive because I filmed the release into the wild.
Oh, how beautiful. Mm-hmm. Now, where can we see this documentary?
In France, we still got the 16 mil. This was a long time ago. None of this was on video. It was all good old 16 mil.
I quite like the idea of the bear slowly coming out of the cage wearing your anorak.
Anyway, Philippe, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you, John. Cheers, Baz.
Thanks.
We'll be back on Monday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.